Grizzly One.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Gabriel.
Yes, sir. Sí. Hasta las 15 de la mañana.
So said Bobby Menendez, U.S. Senator in New Jersey, to the many hookers from hell from Santo Domingo when he said, get out of my stinking hotel room. You don't deserve a tip. That's not what we're going to be talking about today. Rather, how the judge has decided that the trial will continue, even though it appeared as of Friday that this trial against the crooked Bobby Menendez was going south. Well, before we get into all of that, with our guest, featured guest, as he often is, from the Newark Star-Ledger, Paul Molchine. He knows where all the bones are buried and who buried them. You got a chance to make some real scat-o here, moola shmoola. Hey, you know, in the past, WABC, we used to be accused of throwing nickels around like manhole covers, right? We had a policy, don't ask, don't tell. It had nothing to do with your sexuality, but when we had these contests, we give away these cheap tchotchkes. They would come from like Formosa, a.k.a. Taiwan. You know, they were like, you could find them in a 99-cent Jack store. It was embarrassing. But now, hey, we're giving away some real scat-o. And you get a shot at $1,000 four times a day. Let me see. I did pretty well in school, four times well. Okay, $4,000 a day. Okay, that's a lot of scat-o. If you listen for the key words at 9.05 a.m. during Bernie and Sid, then again, when I'm on with Ebony at 12.05, 5 minutes afternoon, then at 3.05 during Michael Savage's show, and 6.05 in the show that follows us, Mark Levin. You text the keyword, it's 62582, and you can win $1,000. And the new 4K a day contest is on. So why not add to your bank account? Hey, yeah, you got to pay taxes on it like everything else. Just listen, text and win four times a day. Get details on WABCRadio.com. That's WABCRadio.com. But from giving away scat-o to somebody who was used to getting favors and gratuities and getting wine lined and pocket lined, first as congressman of the crooked Hudson Democratic machine and its titular head, and now as U.S. Senator of New Jersey, that's Bobby Menendez. On the line, though, to give us an update, what happened at his trial proceeding today is Paul Molchine, columnist for the Star-Ledger. Thanks for jumping on board again, Paul.
Thanks for having me, Curtis.
Okay, so I thought going into today's hearing, the judge was giving every signal in the world that he would probably dismiss the charges before it ever went to a jury and send them home. Was that your gut feeling?
No, I thought he was going to keep the charges because I thought they've spent millions of dollars mounting this trial. It's going to consume all this time. And you might as well get the defense on the record. They're going to have their witnesses get all that stuff on the record and then make up your mind. Making up to say, let's get rid of the defense, those charges. Number one, there still would have been one charge the judge wasn't going to throw out, the false reporting of the goodies that he took. So it really becomes necessary to see what the defense has. I mean, he's got a very talented lawyer, Abby Lowell, and I suspect he's going to put on quite a good defense in which he's going to say, look at all the other things. Look at all the times I flew down there. I paid for it myself. I did this. I did that. I knew the guy. We went to each other. I gave him wedding presents. You know, that he's going to bury the prosecution in detail. And I think the judge heard that in the opening remarks and said, all right, do your best.
So now, in this case, as they go to the defense, most times in criminal prosecutions, the defense puts up a short case, sometimes no case, and will just rest. You're predicting a long series of defensive witnesses and data that will be put before the jury?
Yes. In the opening remarks, Lowell said he intends to bring witnesses that who will state that this was a long-term friendship. They knew each other for 20 years. he did things for Melgen just like Melgen did for him. It was back and forth, and he already established, I believe, that Bobby gave Melgen's daughter a $1,000 wedding gift, flew to the wedding at his own expense. You know, the villa in the DR was not really the luxury villa it's been made out to be. It was a freaking pup tent, you know, that kind of thing.
All right, but the titillating parts of the prosecution case were the floozies, the hookers, the starlets, the models, those that were being brought in by Bobby Menendez for his pal, his Medici, Melgen. Are we going to see any of them resurface in a different form in defense of Menendez and Melgen?
I think you're going to see, you know, older women dressed in muumuus. I mean, I think when it comes to that kind of thing, you know. I think they'll be bringing in all these family types. That's where I thought it was leading. I may be wrong. But I think, you know, family types and, gee, we all got together and we had the birthday cake and we were all together, you know, three generations at in the Dominican Republic all meeting a wonderful giant Latino family, you know, and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, you wrote a great column because whether it's win, lose, or draw that the jury determines as they determine the fate of Bobby Menendez and his Medici, Dr., the infamous Melgen. You were talking about how Medicare is guilty. Can you explain why that has become the most prominent piece of this case?
Well, look at it this way. This guy, in a mere 6 years, collected one-tenth of $1 billion from Medicare, right? Now, if at that rate, every 10 doctors would bill, you know, $100 billion every 5 years. I mean, Medicare, the problem with Medicare is there's no gatekeeper. You just show up, and according to my friend down there, they give you a, they troll the senior neighborhoods and say, we'll give you a free dinner at the Golden Corral if you'll go see the eye doctor. And apparently the Golden Corral is an all-you-can-eat kind of joint. My friend says, you see these real fat people waddling because I guess they're always collecting these free dinners. But that's the kind of thing they do. The doctors down there troll for patients. Patient comes in, whatever you do for them, even, you know, a checkup, you can bill at the Medicare rate. And now what Melchin doing was inexcusable. He was getting this medicine that cost $2,000 that you were only supposed to use once, and he would use it four times but bill the government $8,000, not the $2,000 he paid. And then I since heard from somebody who pointed out that when you reuse that, you may contaminate it and infect the next person. That would be the reason you were only supposed to use it one time. So this just shows Medicare is really in trouble. And that's, you know, if obviously the hypocrisy here is if you're Bob Menendez, the Democratic defender of this wonderful single-payer system, and your buddy built it for a tenth of $1 billion, you're a little bit of a hypocrite.
Oh, yeah. And plus, obviously, he was fighting for the infamous Dr. Melgen to get his reimbursements. But you had mentioned the restaurant that the old-timers, the old out-the-cockers get steered to for their Bluebird special. In return, they end up going to some Medicare doctor. What's the name of that restaurant?
Golden Corral, apparently.
Oh, I've been to the Golden Corral. That's a Chinese buffet joint.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, Chinese buffet. You go in there, first off, the lady at the door, she's tall, very tall in comparison to most Asian women. And she looks at you and say, no lobster legs, no lobster legs on buffet. And she starts screaming that at all the patrons. Because, you know, the old timers, they're there for trafe, you know, even the Jews. Trafe, I want the lobster legs. And so, you go there, and that is your entree to going to the doctor and participating in a Medicare fraud scam.
You know, this guy was billing, when I did the math, $8,000 an hour.
Wow.
This guy would bill. You know, he had to run them through there, and he was diagnosing everybody with this one fairly rare disease, wet macular degeneration. Everybody would just be diagnosed with that, given the expense. And by the way, he's injecting this stuff into your eye. I mean, I don't know. That's why I like to call him Dr. Mengele. You know, that sounds a little,
No, no, you're right.
My needles in my eye.
My dad had that towards the latter part of his life, macular degeneration. He had these injections right into the iris of his eyeball. I said, man, you are a stronger man than I am, Pops, because he would just grimace and grunt. You know, not a tear would drop from his eye, and he would take those shots. And you know something? It didn't do Jack Diddley squat, Paul.
Oh, God, that's a shame. But, yeah, it's, you know, this guy was a real dirtbag, and I think enough of that came out in the prosecution case. Bob is hot-headed, and he did dumb things. Like, when he was on with some of these bureaucrats he was trying to pressure, he slammed the phone down on them. You know, and that's the kind of thing a politician shouldn't do. You should just be very polite, you know. But when you slam the phone down on the guy, he remembers it. He shows up in court. Now, what's the jury think? He slammed the phone down on...
I know, but you know what his excuse is going to be now that the defense puts on the case. Hey, I had that strong Cuban coffee on Bergen Line Avenue in Hudson County. You know, it raised my blood pressure. I apologize. Anyway, Paul Molsheim, great commentator and columnist for the New York Star Ledger. He's been following this case. Especially, I want to bring to your attention his piece on the trial of Menendez and his Medici, the infamous Dr. Melkin. It's all about a Medicare milking doctor that shows the flaws of the single-payer system. You really need to read that. Go online. A great article.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
Oh, that's like smelling salts to me. Music to my nostrils and ears. Because tonight, Yankee Stadium, Game 3 against the Houston Astros. And on the line to discuss CC Sabathia's prospects to getting us back in it, to win it, is Sid Rosenberg. You hear him on Imus in the morning with his sports contributions and commentary. Then so nice he gets to do it twice as part of the team that follows Bernard McGurk and Sid Rosenberg from 9 to 12. Sid, what do you anticipate tonight from CC on the mound?
First of all, it's great to be back on this show. I love coming on this show. And a quick shout-out to a couple of diehard Curtis Sliwa and Yankee fans listening as we speak. Dr. Jimmy Orsini and Lynn, somewhere in Queens, listening to the Curtis Sliwa Drive at 5. Here's what I expect, something I told you last week. You asked me what I thought CC would do in the game against the Indians. That start, you may remember. And I said, listen, I think it's going to be tough to beat Kluber twice, but I fully expect CC's about to get a pitch very, very well. And that's exactly what he did. A couple of numbers for you, Curtis. After a Yankee loss during the regular season, after a Yankee loss, when CC's about to get pitched, he went 9-0. That's pretty good. Also, by the way, the Yankees, in elimination games this year, the one game against the Minnesota Twins and three against Cleveland, they're 4-0. So the numbers are in CC's favor, and the numbers, of course, are with the Yanks. They can't be eliminated tonight, obviously, but with their backs against the wall, they've been very, very good.
Now, the Yankees in general, not just CC, but their relief squad, which is much better than the Houston Astros. Why do they keep feeding fastballs to the shorty short, what I'll call the Terminator of the Houston Astros, and his sidekick, you know, the dynamic shortstop and second base duo there. They eat fastballs alive. They even hit Chapman.
Yeah, I know. Listen, everybody hits Chapman. Not everybody. I shouldn't say that. He went 18-plus innings of scoreless baseball before the Astros got to him. He had been pretty good, but he's not nearly the dominant pitcher he was even last year when he won the World Series with the Cubs. He's just not. And even Betances, although pretty good, has had his ups and downs. Look, they can hit. That's the bottom line. With Altuve at second, he's probably the best hitter in baseball, to be honest. Oh, he's right there with Mike Trout. And Correa at short is amazing, too. You realize, by the way, I know you know this, Curtis, this is the first time in the history of baseball that the shortstops, Didi Gregorius for the Yankees and Correa for the Astros, have hit cleanup for their baseball team. So, you know, you come to see just how middle infielders these days are mashers. The days of Dave Concepcion and Mark Belanger being good fielders, those days are gone. So you're right. The middle infield for the Astros, Altuve and Correa, are brutal, not just on Yankee starters, but the bullpen as well.
All right, but let's have a come-to-Jesus moment. The Jew that you are, Sid Rosenberg, do you want Altuve or do you want the former great Houston Astro Joe Morgan at second?
Oh, that is a very, very tough one. I mean, Altuve hit with a lot of power this year. Morgan always hit with power, right? Whether it was the A's, the Giants, or the Reds. And Morgan, I believe, is the only second baseman to this day to win consecutive MVPs. That's a tough one. I'd probably go with Joe Morgan because I love the Big Red Machine, and he was so good for so long and hit with so much power. But by the way, if we're mentioning Curtis Sliwa, Jose Altuve in the same breath as Joe Morgan, that says a lot about Altuve.
Yeah, no, he is a spark plug for Shorty Short. He is a dynamo. But let me flip the script from the Yankees tonight and take you to the charge that Kopernik is making against the NFL, that the owners were in collusion, and he's even including the president of the United States and keeping him out of the box.
Well, he's right. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not colluding. I don't know if Jerry Jones actually called Tim Mara, and Tim Mara called Woody Johnson with the Jets, and Woody Johnson called Arthur Blanks in Atlanta. I know that went down, but it is pretty obvious that all these owners have come to the realization that Colin Kaepernick is just bad for business. Look, he's better than a lot of quarterbacks in football right now. I mean, Aaron Rodgers got hurt against the Vikings yesterday, dislocated his shoulder. Curtis, he's out for the year. Even Jameis Winston got banged up for the Buccaneers. There's a bunch of guys starting not as good as Colin Kaepernick. He's probably better than half the quarterbacks on the rosters in the NFL. So what other explanation is there for him not to be on a team other than he's bad for business, he's a hateful guy, he has started this cause that has hurt the NFL with the fans and business, and nobody wants him. So the truth is, yes, he's probably right, but the hard part is prove that, even with Mark Geragos in a court of law. Odds are it ain't going to happen.
And then finally, Sid Rosenberg, the Jets game yesterday against the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick. The Zebra referee said touchdown. Upon review, they took it back. You had a chance, like I had a chance, to watch review after review after review. What a Shonda of the Goy, am I correct?
Oh, man, you know, Curtis, people are saying, hey, that's the worst call in the history of the National Football League. Now, listen, the rule is stupid to begin with. I mean, the rule is kind of like the Tuck rule. Remember when Brady got that first win against the Raiders and won his first Super Bowl? He actually was lucky he had the Tuck rule in his favor. This call yesterday was either a really bad call or a stupid rule. I think it was probably the first, a bad call. He had possession of the football. He hit the pylon. Should have been a Jet touchdown. Now, listen, they don't tie the game or take the lead at that point, but they do cut the Patriot lead to 3, and they've got serious momentum with about 7 minutes left in the game. So I'm not saying the Jets win the game if they score that touchdown, but it gives them a much better shot. That call killed the Jets, maybe the worst call of all time. And I'm a Giant fan saying that.
All right, but being a Giant fan, the Denver Broncos, best defensive team in football, were they smoking ropes of dope because marijuana is recreational in Denver? I mean, how did they get blown out by the Giants?
You know, the Giants' defense, for me, has been more disappointing than the offense. Losing 4 wide receivers, they've got the awful offensive line. They really can't run the football except the last 2 games. And of course, they lose other wide receivers to injury. But I thought their defense, Curtis, going through the season was one of the best in football, especially their front four. We haven't seen it. Saw it last night, right? They put pressure on Trevor Siemian. The defensive backfield was great. Jenkins with a pick 6. So that's a really good Giants defense. Finally, they played well last night. Denver probably took them easy, to be honest, knowing Eli's coming in with no weapons. And the Giants defense played to what they could be. And Denver's not great. Let's face it, they've got 3 wins on the season, but they're very inconsistent offensively. Not completely shocked as a 2-touchdown underdog, the Giants won the game. Denver's not that good, and the Giants not that bad.
Well, then it's true. I wasn't in a drug-induced psychosis when I watched that upset. But anyway, that's Sid Rosenberg. You catch him every morning with Imus and his crew, 9 to 12. And then so nice, he does it twice on his own show with Bernard McGurk from 9 to 12.
Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
I'm Chiquita Banana, and I come to say I come from Little Island down the Equator way. I sail on Bigger Banana boat from Caribbean to see if I can help the neighbors.
540. Oh, this is like a blast from the past. The Chiquita Banana Girls. And you remember they put Chiquita Bananas out from Guatemala, Honduras, Central America. They'd be out at your local grocery store or your fruit stand. And then if the bananas began to turn brown, all of a sudden you'd see these tsetse flies, these fruit flies gather around. Yeah. They'd be everywhere. And you'd say, hey, I'm not going to buy. Hey, Mr. Bachigaloop, I'm not buying these bananas. They got these flies around. And then you get into a big argument with Mr. Bachigaloop, and then he ends up throwing the cash register at your medulla. But anyway, it's so right on time because with global warming and climate change seeming to have taken a little vacation as the temperatures begin to plummet. It's a great column, again, in the Record. This guy, back-to-back, belly-to-belly, Bill Ervolino. Last week, this week, it's great. And it's focused on the fall fruit fly invasions. Thanks for joining us again, Bill, here on the Drive Home at 5.
Good afternoon. I have these. I don't know if you have, if you gardened whatever this year, but I mean, I bring it in the tomatoes and the gagoots and everything else. And in a day or two, then I start seeing these little things flying around and flitting all over the place. And in a day or two, there's like 10 times more of them because they keep multiplying like crazy.
Where did it come from? Because I remember years ago, my Aunt Mary, she'd slice open a nice piece of honeydew or cantaloupe. If you left it out there for any period of time, all of a sudden these fruit flies would be all over it.
Yeah, many, many years ago, I don't have an exact number, but people used to think that they grew spontaneously out of, you know, old fruit. They would just come out of it. Because the thing is, they're so small. You see one, it's an adult, but with the smaller ones can get right in through a screen and they lay the eggs. You know how many lay? 500 eggs. One little, and they're polygamous, which is like a medical term for hua, basically.
Yeah.
They sleep around, and then they lay 500 eggs, each one of them, up to that amount. And then they start coming out, and then all of a sudden you think you have a million of them. They like drains. They like your if you don't take your garbage out every 5 minutes, you know, I mean, it's like they go in the garbage pail. Any place where you have fruit, it's on there. Now, if you clean the fruit and wash it off, you know, you're not gonna really have a problem. But they've already been on there.
Well,
you just have to wash it off.
My grandfather Fidel Bianchino used to have the fig tree in the yard.
Oh.
And you know, he would take the tarp from on the roof, you know, the tar paper, and cover it for the winter. But I say, yeah. Why are you doing this, Pa? He say, oh, fruit flies, they're everywhere.
It's like, your family would go, your wife would go without a coat, but you had to cover the fig tree.
Exactly. And then, remember, they would somehow get into the windowsill where the screen was, and you couldn't get them to freak out of there.
No, they can go right, the little ones can go right through the screen. That's how small they are. That's why you can't even see them. So when all of them grow up all of a sudden, in 24 hours or whatever it is, then suddenly you've got like, 50, 60 of all over the place. Where'd these come from? And that's the reason, because they're so tiny when they start. But the fun thing is catching them. Because, you like to catch, I remember when I was a kid in Queens, I remember coming home. We had an empty house two doors away, and it was empty for like a year. We went in there, the grass was high, and we saw a rodent running around. So I come back, and I said to my mother, I need a piece of cheese. And she says, you ate already. I said, we're trying to catch a rat. And so she was not happy. We were going to catch it with a shoebox and put the cheese under. I don't know where we got this idea. But the catching the fruit flies, you could put this vinegar and soap. You can put... there's an expression, you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar, but all these things call for vinegar. Apple cider vinegar, they're very attracted to it. And you could put it in a bowl with a little dish detergent, and you put it like a cone into the bowl with a banana, your Chiquita banana on the bottom. It goes into the cone, can't get it. It's like a science project.
But it's not like the lightning bugs, the fireflies, you know.
It doesn't have that excitement. You know, basically, they're dead.
But I remember we used to think that those tsetse flies, you know, that would last like ephemerally, like maybe that day and then drop dead from fornicating and copulating so much, as you mentioned.
They're pigs.
Right,
they
the fruit flies. We thought that they emerged and became those big horse house flies.
No. And I still get those. You're getting the last ones of summer now. And these are very, like, sluggish ones. You know, the other one would last. You see them sometimes in between the window. If you got the window closed, you got the screen and the glass, and they're up and down and up, and they keep going up and down, and then they just drop dead. Or they come out, you see it, you just hit it. Because, you know, in the summer, they get away. They drive you crazy. By this time of year, they're like, whatever. You know, they're kind of slowed down.
Well, some of them, you could put a saddle on them and ride them.
Horse flies?
Yeah, they're big. And by the way, people who love coffee, a nice cup of coffee, you know, you put the milk in or the cream or the half and half, whatever you like. You leave that freaking cup out on the table there. You come back to it. It seems like there's a colony of either fruit flies or horse flies.
I had one of those big house flies. That happened to me 2 weeks ago. But the other thing is, You know, at night I put a little Jack Daniels next to my bed, you know, for medicinal
purposes. Oh, yes, of course.
And in the morning, there is usually one of those little fruit fly things or gnats, whatever you call it. Yeah, by the way, somebody has gotten like a big, somebody at Harvard has been studying circadian rhythm in humans by looking at fruit flies.
Hmm.
By the intestines. He's studying the intestines of fruit flies. I these things are so tiny, I haven't figured out how on earth he's doing this, but it's an interesting story.
What I need to know, Bill Ervolino of the record, is the best way to catch him, because old school was my grandmother, Nicoletta Bianchino, she would go to the hardware store and get the fly paper. You know, it was always sticky,
yeah.
And you would hang it up, like maybe on the light, and it would hang down, and you could never totally get the fly paper off correctly. Is that the best method to catch these little critters?
If you walk into that, you're going to have a problem because that'll stick on your head. It's not the best way. I don't think so. But, I mean, any way you can have. If you have a little tape, you want to put it somewhere, like a double-sided tape or fly paper. But I think the best thing is to put the little the vinegar, apple cider vinegar, a little, they say dish soap, mixed in with it for some reason. That kind of gets them, keeps them from leaking.
Oh, a little ivory soap there.
Yeah, Ivory, Dawn, whatever. And that's it. Or you can put like a paper cone into some vinegar with a banana at the bottom. So they go in through the cone, they fly in, the top part is open, but they get to the bottom and then they can't figure out how to get out.
Well, I got to tell you, Bill Ervolino, it's a lot better than setting off one of those insect bombs and suffocating, I mean, asphyxiating in your house. You know, it's like Raid. Oh, man, you do not want to do that.
In the morning.
So far, so good.
And the drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air, online, on the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
5:54 as we continue to take you home on the drive home at 5. And what a piece of work this Cyrus White Shoes Vance is, Manhattan District Attorney. Going into the general election November 7th, if you looked across every line, he had no competition. And then we found out back to back, belly to belly, the number of times he's accepted political contributions to make cases go away on behalf of the defense counsel who wrote the checks for his reelection. The most infamous, Harvey Weinstein. Two sets of lawyers wrote out checks totaling $40,000 as political contributions. Then we saw the private attorney for Trump, Kasowitz, wrote out $30,000 worth of checks to make charges go away against Ivanka and Donald Trump Jr. in a real estate scam in Soho. And now we see there was checks written by the law firm that represented comrade Bill de Blasio in that pay-for-play scheme. And now, in today's Daily News, Cyrus White Shoes Vance says he's going to investigate his own fundraising. Well, there are two guys who are running against him now. They've jumped in to suggest to the voters of Manhattan County that there be choice. One was Mark Fleetner. We interviewed him the other day. And today it's a longtime critic of Cyrus Vance, attorney Peter Gleason. Thanks for joining us on the drive home at 5, Peter.
Thank you, Curtis. Great to be here.
Now, what motivated you now to jump in a writing campaign to unseat Cyrus White Shoes Vance?
Well, thus far, my criticisms of Cyrus Vance have gone on deaf ears. But when you interject somebody as disgusting and vile as Harvey Weinstein, I think everybody takes notice because of what he's allegedly done to a bevy of beauties in Hollywood.
What is your reaction to his piece in today's Daily News where he said he will investigate himself about his fundraising from defense counsel?
The fox in the hen house comes to mind.
And
I hate to be brief on it, but that's what came to my mind when I read the article.
Okay, so everyone wants to know, all right, if they come to vote on November 7th, if they have registered to vote in Manhattan County, and they write in your name to become the next Manhattan District Attorney, how is your term in office going to be different than Cyrus White Shoes Vance?
It's very simple. Equal protection, equal treatment, and fairness for all. It doesn't matter if you're a kid walking on the streets of Harlem or if you're a banker working down on Wall Street. Everybody should have the same rights under the law And unfortunately, with the Weinstein debacle and numerous other debacles, some of which I've been involved in, we don't have that in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and it's really that simple. If you treat everybody equally and fairly, everything else falls into place. If you remember during the Giuliani administration, people were saying, broken window, broken window, broken window. So if you treat everybody the same and you're gonna enforce the laws equally, then everything seems to fall in place and makes New York a better place.
Appreciate that. That's Peter Gleason, writing candidate to replace Cyrus White Shoes Vance, along with Mark Fleetner, who have just jumped in to give the voters choice in Manhattan and to get the corrupt one, Cyrus White Shoes Vance, out of there lickety-split.